Empathic listening means listening to where the other person's coming from with a beginner's mind, meaning you don't have an agenda.
When you're not listening with empathy, then you're talking at someone versus having a conversation with somebody.
Welcome to Think Deeply, Speak Simply, brought to you by Presentium, a show about the art and science of communicating ideas and how everyday leaders unlock their careers with great communication. And now, here's your host, Jay Rook.
Where sympathy is defined as understanding someone else from one's own perspective, empathy involves putting yourself in another's shoes. When we listen with empathy, we attempt to understand why someone feels a certain way. In doing so, the other person feels heard, and the listener is better suited to find impactful solutions to their problems. In this episode, we are joined by two advocates of promoting empathetic listening in the workplace. Our first guest is Dr. Mark Goldston, co-founder of the Michelangelo Mindset, founding member of Newsweek Expert Forum, and a TEDx speaker. He's joined by Jignasha Grooms, Executive Vice President and Global Human Resources Leader with Epicor Software. The two glean powerful insights from their experiences in listening with empathy and discuss how it can impact business success. With that, let's hear from our guest. Let's welcome Mark Goldston to the show. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I can hardly wait to think deeply and speak simply.
Excellent. Excellent. Mark, your body of work spans more than four decades and includes coaching, counseling, becoming an author, contributor, and speaker, amongst other roles. Can you tell us about your path and how listening and empathy became a focus of your work?
Well, I was trained as a psychiatrist at UCLA, and early on, my focus was suicide prevention. So one of my early mentors was probably one of the top five pioneers in the area of suicide prevention, a fellow named Dr. Ed Schneidman. He co-founded the Suicide Prevention Centers in Washington, Los Angeles, founded the American Association of Suicidology. And he would refer me these suicidal inpatients who needed to be discharged. And one of the, I think, happiest misfortunes for me is I was going to go into a fellowship that got canceled about a week before I finished training. And I thought, well, I'll just go out there. But what worked out well is since I didn't work for an institution, when I would meet with patients who had deep suicidal thinking, I followed a protocol. I wasn't rogue. I was responsible. But what I picked up is when I was with them and I'd look into their eyes would be saying, "You're checking boxes and I'm running out of time." So I had the choice to check boxes or just see where their eyes took me. And if I worked for an institution, I'd have to be following so many protocols. And why did you ask that? And what did you ask next? And so I got more and more comfortable listening into people's eyes. When they could feel felt by me, not just understood, they might let go of death as the way to take their pain away and grab onto feeling felt. And feeling felt is different than feeling understood. I went and worked at a place called the Menninger Foundation, which is a psychiatric institution. At that time, it was in Topeka, Kansas. Now it's in Houston. And I grew up in a suburb of Boston, and yet I was connecting with schizophrenic farm boys in Kansas. And when I asked the psychiatrist who worked there, you know, "Is this legitimate? It's not like medical school." And they said, no, it's legitimate. "And you seem to have a gift or a talent." So I went back knowing that I think if I can make it through and become a psychiatrist, I might be able to pull this thing off. And I'm now building a course for an accelerator. Every 3 months, I talk to about 15 of their startups. And what I'm trying to teach and coach them on is investors are always listening for something. And they're not necessarily listening for the next big idea, because all of you have big ideas. What they're listening for are the return on investment. What they're listening for is this going to work out? They're listening for, are you a good group of people? Do you have a good team? Can you actually make whatever your business is happen? They're listening for that. Yeah, they would like your business to solve a problem that the world needs, but they're not listening for you to share all your passion about it because they're investors. And if you know they're listening for that, and you can design your pitch to what they're listening for, as opposed to trying to excite them about your great idea, which every other startup has, they're going to feel, you really get where we're coming from. And they'll give you the gift of their attention. And if you do have value, they'll give you the gift of their investment.
Well, Mark, you've also served as a FBI hostage negotiator and trainer. Obviously, most business leaders don't deal with situations of that intensity. But what learnings can we apply from your training when dealing with stressful situations in the workplace?
Well, I beg to differ with you, because I think many entrepreneurs are being held hostage in their company, sometimes by someone they shouldn't have hired, sometimes by a founder who really doesn't bring value to the company. And then you have to figure out, how do you extricate yourself? And you only have a certain window of time and money. And I've seen companies fail because they couldn't manage this conflict. So some advice that I give, if you're an entrepreneur or a founder and you're hiring people, one of the best questions, maybe the top question to ask people after you check all the boxes in their skill set, is say to them, tell me about disappointments so far in your career. They're going to go, what? Yeah, just tell me about, how differences of opinions and, you know, disagreements have been handled. Because what you want to listen for is someone who can deal with conflict constructively. If their answers are, it's always about someone else. I actually have three strikes that I suggest to founders. So the first one is, you know, tell me about differences of opinion and disagreements. You're not pointing a finger who caused them. So you're looking for them to be able to actually share how they contributed to it. That's strike one if they can't. Mm-hmm. The second strike is, well, you know, whenever there's a difference of opinion and disagreement, there's always two sides to every story. So how did you contribute to the situation? Mm-hmm. If you still hear crickets, they're still not getting it. And then the third strike is, you could say, you know, if you work for us, we're going to have differences of opinions. We're going to have disagreements. And so if we run into those going forward, what's the best way from your point of view for us to handle them, you know, so that we can get back on the rails and moving forward? And again, if they are clueless, I'd really think carefully, even if they're very skilled, before I hire them.
How about this? You're considered a global thought leader in empathic listening, and your book, Just Listen, was translated into 28 languages while becoming the top book on listening in the world. Can you tell us what empathic listening means to you?
So empathic listening means listening to where the other person's coming from with a beginner's mind, meaning you don't have an agenda, and being curious where they're coming from, which they experience as being valued. I'll give you an exercise that is in, during the pandemic, another co-author, Dr. Diana Hendel, and I wrote two books, Why Cope When You Can Heal, is about how to get through and get over this pandemic. And the second one is Trauma to Triumph, a roadmap for leading through disruption and thriving on the other side. And so with empathic listening, what you really want to do is follow this exercise. It's called the HUVA exercise, H-U-V-A. And if you practice this once a day with a conversation in which you want to be present as opposed to making it all about you, if you do select just one conversation and do it for a week, and you start to internalize it, it will change all your relationships. And what HUVA stands for is, after you have the conversation with the other person, in your own mind, you grade yourself from their point of view. H stands for they felt heard out by you. On a scale of 1 to 10, did they feel heard out, or did you interrupt them, change the subject, make it all about you? U, they felt understood by you. Did you ask them to elaborate on something? Did you ask them to say more about that? Did you say to them, is there anything else you wanted to add? V, they felt valued by you on a scale of 1 to 10. And valued might be you've actually done a little of that already in eyes. You could say, I really like that, Mark. That's really neat. And then the final A is, did they feel you added value? And adding value might be not only did you hear them, understand them, and value them, but you might even suggest something and say, have you ever thought of using that in this kind of setting? I think that would really work. So grade yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 on how much they felt heard, understood, valued, and you added value. And don't beat up on yourself. All of us are not very good at that. But can you see how if you build that muscle, you will increase how present you are, how empathic you are?
Love that. And like you said, about going back to the WHOVA acronym, almost it brings that level of awareness that we have and self-awareness around how we're behaving in the conversation and almost the mindfulness of when we start to watch our inner dialogue start to drift away from a conversation. It's just, you know, you're gently guiding it back to being present and being there in that moment. How about this, Mark, on that growth to personal journey that you do with so many of the founders and CEOs that you work with, how do we embrace empathy as we communicate with ourselves in that own internal dialogue?
Well, I spoke with a fellow named Jack Cochran, and he was the CEO of the Kaiser Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, really just this great leader, but also an entrepreneur. And what he said that was very important, he said, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have to be able to forgive yourself for mistakes. He said, because if you beat up on yourself, if you, you know, talk down to yourself, and if you yell at yourself, how could you be so stupid? You know, you've done it again. You're so foolish. What makes you think that you can succeed as an entrepreneur? Why don't you go, you know, take a corporate job and go back to being burned out? You know, what he said is, you got to forgive yourself as an entrepreneur because you're going to fail more often than succeed. The key is to learn from your failures. You don't have to like them. You can be unhappy with it. He said, but if you launch into so much self-hatred, you're giving yourself the message, don't take chances. Well, if you can't take chances, you can't be an entrepreneur.
Yep. Love that. Thank you. Mark, where can our listeners go to learn more about you, connect, consume some of your content, et cetera?
Well, if you Google me, I got a lot going on, but I do have this MichelangeloMindset.com. MarkGoulston.com is pretty current. I have Bloggeria, so you'll find all kinds of content. My wake-up call is on its 230th episode, with 25 recorded ones in the queue. So I'm posting 3 a week now. And also on LinkedIn. My LinkedIn profile is pretty much up to date.
That sounds great. Well, Mark, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, I want to say thank you so much for all the insights you provided today and techniques that we can do to use to get better at listening and empathic listening. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You've been a great listener. You gave me just enough of a leash, probably a longer leash, but you were very kind and patient. So I give you a very good WHOVA score.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Thanks again,
Mark. Thank you.
Before we move on to our next guest, let's hear from our amazing sponsor, Presentium.
Do you spend way too much time creating presentations at work? Do you hate the hassle of creating polished presentations for work? If so, I've got an opportunity for you to reclaim your time, reduce your stress, and make your ideas shine. Think Deeply, Speak Simply is brought to you by Presentium. Presentium makes overnight presentations for enterprise customers at a fraction of the cost of design firms and agencies. They have made over 1 million slides and are trusted by thousands of enterprise customers. It is super easy to use. Just email Presentium a rough draft of your slides by 5:30 p.m., and you'll receive a beautifully crafted presentation in your inbox by 9:30 the next morning. Put Zen in your presentations, reclaim your time, and let your ideas shine. To learn more, visit Presentium.com. That's Presentium.com. And now back to the show.
And with that, let's welcome Jignasha Grooms to the show. Jignasha, welcome.
Thanks so much, Jay. So excited to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Jig, you're the Executive Vice President and Global Human Resources Lead at Epicor Software. Can you tell us about Epicor and your role with them?
Yes, of course. So Epicor Software is based out of Austin, Texas, and we've got about 4,000 of us globally. And we are predominantly a software company that's almost 50 years old. Specifically, we're in the ERP space, and we are actually the essential partner to essential businesses. So you'll recognize a lot of our customers, Ace Hardware Stores, Traeger Grills, WD-40, everybody's got to have a can of that, as well as some pretty exciting customers like the Chicago Bulls, London Taxi. And if you're at all interested in F1 racing, then we're actually the software that powers the Red Bull Racing team.
What a great story. Thank you.
Yeah.
As we've learned to view empathetic listening as a superpower, how do you feel the role of empathy has changed in the executive suite?
I think it's hugely changed. I'm an accidental HR person. I wasn't planning on being in HR, but I feel like all of my life experiences and my education and truly how I'm innately wired has made it really fulfilling to be in this role. I won't say it's always easy, but it's been incredibly fulfilling. And I think that listening with empathy and really seeking to understand, that's the second part around listening with empathy, has made a huge difference from a management team perspective, whether you call it the executive team, the C-suite, we call it the ELT, the executive leadership team. And I think the fact that our leadership team has been able to pivot that way over the last 5 years, as we've truly focused on culture and putting our employees at the center of our business value proposition as a core measure of our success, I think that ability to listen with empathy has really helped us in many ways. And they're all quantitative, and they're all things you can discuss with the board, right? For instance, I think our employee engagement scores, and I'm going to knock on some wood when I say this, Jay, are at their highest because we have a leadership team at all levels, not just the C-suite, but at all levels that really listens with empathy. I think that when your employee engagement is high, then your attrition is reduced. And I understand that there's a war on talent going on, and it's, you know, really tough to be an employer right now. But the better your employee engagement, the lower your attrition, which actually enhances your P&L. And when you put your employees at the center of your business value proposition, they reflect it forward to your customers. And it goes back to the question you asked me earlier. When your customers feel like you are in the service of their success and you're a trusted partner to them, they reward you with business. It's actually a beautiful, virtuous cycle that all starts with listening with empathy.
Great answer. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Jake, you were interviewed by Authority Magazine in a Medium article titled, Five Steps We Must Take to Truly Create an Inclusive, Representative, and Equitable Society. As we begin to take DEI initiatives more seriously, what's the business case for empathy in the modern business environment?
I think there's a huge business case for empathy. So I'm going to give you my short answer and my long answer. I think that listening with empathy and empathetic leadership will drive your entire people strategy. And as a matter of fact, I'd go a step further and say it'll drive your global workforce strategy if you're more than one country. We're in 30 different countries, right? So the cultures are going to be what the cultures are. But when leadership really focuses on empathy as a core value, then all of your employees, no matter where they sit, will feel like they are adding value to the business through their work. And when they feel like they're adding value and when they feel like their work is being valued, then that will naturally drive better business results. You know, people always talk about customer experience, but my peer, Jason Taylor, who runs global customer support for Epicor, we always say he and I are two sides to the same coin. You can't have a great customer experience unless you have a great employee experience and vice versa. And both of those start with the ability to listen with empathy. And it goes back to your business results, Jay. So if you look at Epicor's business results, one of the reasons we've been as successful as we've been is because our employees truly reflect our customer base and our customers feel like we understand their business problems. We understand their day-to-day operational needs. And because of that, we're actually able to be better partners.
Totally makes sense. When we're not coming from a position of empathy, what are the symptoms you often see within a team?
Oh, man. Okay. So there's so many, but my two favorite are assumptions. People lead with assumptions and people assume negative intent. Right? Those two show up very often. And, you know, there's a really old adage about the word assume, and I'm sure you've seen it, you know, what happens when people assume too much. But that is really what happens when you're not listening with empathy, because nine times out of 10, when you're not listening with empathy, then you're talking at someone versus having a conversation with somebody. And people are generally very smart, no matter what level they are in an organization, no matter where they sit, no matter what job they do. And they know when you're listening with empathy and seeking to understand. So I think that's a big one, right? And I think the second one is the assumption of negative intent, right? When we feel like we're not being heard, and this is true in any relationship, not just in a business relationship. I can tell you this is true even in my marriage, and I love my husband, right? But when you feel like you're not being heard, then when the other person is speaking, you're leading with this intention of, well, they're not really listening to me anyway. Why bother? And all of that then drives a disengaged and disjointed workforce, right? And again, same is true in your personal life. I know the difference when my husband and I sit down and really listen to each other versus when we're just kind of talking at each other, hoping the other person's kind of tuned in. And really, if you get this right, then what it can lead to is a much more deeply engaged and fulfilled workforce. And as I said earlier, they'll reflect that forward to your customers. When your customers feel it, they'll reward you with more business. It's pretty simple.
Love that. If empathy does not come naturally to a business leader, what's your advice for how to begin to incorporate it into one's management style?
So I always tell people, don't boil the ocean. You know, most people that want to have this conversation with me want like a laundry list of things they should do. And I tell them to start simply. And here's an easy example of that. Over the last few years at Epicor, we've implemented quarterly checkpoint discussions. They're not performance reviews. They're not discussions about what you're working on day to day. That's what your regular one-on-ones are for. These quarterly checkpoint discussions are really to check in on your employees and just to listen and have a conversation. And even for the employees to be able to have an open forum where they can ask questions, right? So I would say for business leaders who are seeking to be more empathetic, start with something simple. You know, spending 30 minutes a quarter with each of your employees isn't a huge investment of your time, especially if you break it up into different weeks over the quarter. But not doing that could create a level of assumption, misunderstandings, or lack of information to do their job better. So I think that's the easiest and simplest way to start. The other thing I would say is listen to understand and seek to understand versus just letting the person say what they need. So then you can quickly add what you want to say.
Excellent. This is a question we ask of all of our guests on the show. Do you think great business communication is more of an art or science, and why?
I think it's both. And that's a great question to ask. So I think there is a definitive science around great communication. And we can go into it from what I call an L&D perspective, or learning and development perspective. You know, when I first joined HR, but God, I can't believe this, over 16 years ago, we used to say, teach everyone the rule of three-peat. You have to repeat something three times for people to remember it. Well, in the current age of everything seeking your attention every few seconds, you know, your phone, your computer, the emails dinging, I call it seven-peat, right? Like you basically have to say the same thing seven times for people to hear it. But I do think there's a science around it, and there's a formulaic approach to it. But really more important piece is the art of communication. And I teach this to my kids all the time, right? When my boys were little, I used to say, if you want to have good friends, you have to start by being a good friend. So simple. This is the kind of stuff we learned in kindergarten. Right, Jay? But it is so true, right? So if you want to have high-performing employees, you have to start by being a high-performing manager. And a large part of management is around communication. And it comes down to three very specific things, right? One of those things is transparency. The more you share with people, and as a manager, you have to decide what you should and what you shouldn't share. But the more transference of information there is in an open, honest way within your team, the better the work product. The second thing is really checking in on people. I mentioned quarterly checkpoints earlier, and I'll bring them back again, you know, especially right now, because with COVID, there's a lot happening. And my three favorite words over the last 20 months have been lead with empathy. lead with empathy. And then if you're really not listening, then I added, don't be myopic and make the assumption that everybody's having the same experience as you. It's not true. Even with my team, I have to say that because they often over-rotate to what it feels like to have been virtual in the US and now to start coming back into the office. I'm like, but have you considered our colleagues in Hong Kong who live in differently sized spaces and can't wait to get back into the office? So I think that, you know, that whole transference of information is key.
Yeah. And final question here. Jig, what advice would you have for aspiring business leaders who want to improve their communication?
I would say be concise. So I've had the wonderful gift of being put into a program that really taught me about executive presentations. And then I had the even more good fortune of being certified in teaching executive presentation skills. And what I would share with everybody who wants to work on this is try to be concise and frame the objective of your conversation in the first 30 to 60 seconds to your key business stakeholders. You know, with my team, I call that providing an answer first, and I give them a frame, right? So that in 30 to 60 seconds, they have gauged their audience and they've framed the conversation so they can influence the outcome. If you don't do that, then it becomes a very circular conversation where you may or may not get the end result you want. So I think that's the simplest way to do it, right? Frame your conversation, be concise, and make sure you have a very clear objective in mind when you start that conversation, and make sure that you've gauged your audience so that it immediately resonates with them.
Excellent. Well, Jig, on behalf of myself and all of our listeners, just want to say thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation today, and I appreciate the time you put in and for the thoughtful responses that you gave.
Yeah, same here, Jay. I'm really, truly honored to be on this podcast, and I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the reactions to the workplace shift during the pandemic is that businesses are spending more effort to ensure their employees are satisfied within their company roles. Our guest maintained that one of the best ways to do that is for superiors and colleagues to practice listening with empathy. For those looking to practice this skill, Mark gives a surefire method. He shares the WHOVA technique, which stands for heard out, understood, valued, and added value. When you finish a conversation with someone, Mark suggests rating yourself in each category on a scale of 1 to 10 and asserts that this practice will change your relationships around you. Though empathetic listening is a powerful tool to strengthen all relationships, business leaders can also trace its value to the bottom line. Jignasha relays the point that employee engagement reaches a peak when everyone is listening with empathy. This lessens attrition and ultimately enhances the culture and collaboration in the workplace. As Jignasha put it, when you put your employees first, they reflect it to their customers. You can't have happy customers without happy employees. We hope that today's conversations encourage you to listen with empathy, as well as concrete tips for how you can start cultivating this superpower today. On behalf of our amazing sponsor, Presentium, and executive producer, Rajat Mishra, thank you for listening to this episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. I'm your host, Jay Rook, and if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast, and we'd love it if you would rate and review the show. Until next time, think deeply and speak simply.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Think Deeply, Speak Simply. To learn more about the art and science of communicating ideas, visit our thought leadership library at presentium.com.